Hello and welcome. This is Rick Watson. I am here with John Roman, the CEO of BattleBox. Thanks for coming to the program.
Thanks for having me, Rick. Excited.
You have, a particularly unique view on a number of subjects. You produce a lot of great content, and you also have the name of your company suggests something, and like almost like the era that it was founded in, because the box business, meaning the subscription box business, had a moment, like a cultural moment that was sort of like a sub moment within the D2C, legend. Can you talk about your founding story? Like, where did BattleBox come from? And I think that's a good place to kick us off.
So let's go back to 2015, which, as you said, was like this moment where subscription boxes were just the coolest thing, and everyone had right. two of them or three of them, it seemed.
Right.
And obviously that's changed a lot in the last decade, right? That this little sub niche is gotten absolutely destroyed.
Right.
And there's not a lot of survivors left. And the big ones, the golden children, right? The birch boxes of the world that are long gone.
Yeah.
Or an empty shell of what they used to be. So my ex-business partner, he hasn't been involved in the business in quite some time now, 5 years. His fiance at the time was getting a Birchbox, ironically, which, was this this billion-dollar
value. Right?
They were the gold standard.
Right.
And he'd see her get it every month, and the genuine excitement on her face, opening up, unboxing, seeing these new, beauty and health products. And, she enjoyed it. And he wanted that feeling for himself. Avid outdoorsman, went online, was like, well, there's all these subscription boxes. Surely there's one for me. And he couldn't find one. It was as simple as that. He said, well, maybe there's an opportunity here. And the rest is history, right? We were on, they're technically, I guess they are still around. They haven't gone under. They're probably nowhere near where they used to be. But we launched not on Shopify. Mm-hmm. We launched on a very niche platform called Cratejoy that was literally.
I know Cratejoy.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, they were, without any, web development.
Yeah, it's a marketplace.
Expertise. Yeah. We launched a website nowhere near what ours is today. But we launched a website through a template, and we're off to the races fairly quickly. The subscription box world is you're selling for a month before you even have to fulfill. So you're getting this cash in, almost even validating product market fit with very little risk. And that was it. We were, his desire for replicating his fiance's feeling for himself. It turned out he wasn't alone, and it was probably, if we launched today, I think the barrier to entry is much different, much different. And, it was timing. It was timing with a few other variables, but 2015 was the time to do it.
Yeah, no, I it's a fascinating story as well as the rest of your story in today, but I think it definitely pinpoints a time. Funny. I actually, Cratejoy was a consulting client of mine, like early on in the business, maybe in the 2020 timeframe. I even went to Austin to their HQ.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. And so it's definitely a cool business that was actually doing quite well at the time.
Because they were out of YC. Like they had this huge momentum.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so interesting. But I didn't even know that you guys launched on Cratejoy before just a few minutes ago. So that's hilarious.
Yeah, that was it.
Talk to me about the subscription box and what is BattleBox? Okay, so it had like subscription boxes in your name. So what do you think about the subscription box now?
I hate the term subscription box. It's just, to your point, it's in our name and we can't change it, right?
Right?
It's BattleBox. At the end of the day, we're just outdoor survival storefront gear place community for people to come to. Big emphasis on the community piece, but the reality is our core business, it'll probably still be about 70-75% of our revenue in 2026 is the membership.
That's great.
Which is another word for the subscription box. But we, by design, call it a membership because, man, the subscription box industry and the model, it has a couple of black eyes. It's been a rough couple of years for most.
Everyone I've seen, particularly in fashion, where you have configuration, a size, color, especially fit, you know, those things are a disaster in normal retail, never mind a subscription box business. And so those guys never had a prayer, but they didn't know it. But the rest of it, when you say the model has some black eyes, talk to me about the inventory component of it and how you manage that.
So it is such a challenge because, let's go back March 2015, you know, the first month, I think 300 people sign up for the subscription box. So, we had an idea, we had already gotten pricing, ordering 300 from these 6-7 different vendors, or maybe we'll get lucky and one vendor is 4 things. It's easy, right? It's on the shelf. We have it in a couple of days. We already got the money for it. So it's easy to pay.
Yeah.
Very, very, very easy process. You know, when we cross that, somewhere probably in the 8,000 to 10,000 membership levels, the dynamics completely changed because no vendor has, because, you know, these aren't samples. These aren't little mini atomizers of perfume. These are actual pieces of gear.
Yeah, so no big one has things, heavy, bulky things sometimes.
Right. And no one has them sitting on a shelf. At that scale, it's a production run. Whether they're doing a dedicated production run, whether you're piggybacking on their next production run, what we do now a lot of times, we give smaller businesses their first production run. We take their product to scale because
you have the audience.
We have the audience, and
that's
it's
so
the
cool.
only way to get the quantity.
That's actually like a really testament, I think, to your platform, which is what I would call it, to launch brands. I mean, much the same way that CrateJoy was for you.
No, and it's a good point, and it's one of those things. Some boxes are checked with just feeling good about a situation. With some of these, where like it's a knife maker, and he can pop out 100 knives in a month, and that's pretty cool. But like now we need thousands and thousands and thousands. So like we're showing him our supply chain and allowing him to then take his business to the next level, which is kind of cool to showcase.
Yeah.
Showcase the smaller businesses. So to answer your question, it's a nightmare because it's production runs and, the challenges of it's tough to really build too many relationships on the manufacturing brand side because we can't feature the same brand too many times. We can't ever feature the same product. So like as soon as we're done with 1 month, it's the next, but, we're having to forecast out, typically, I would say a minimum, typically 6 months. And there's a lot of variables from the obvious ones like churn and retention, but customer acquisition. What if Meta ads stop working and we can't acquire a certain number? The inventory piece can be very challenging because with certainty in this model, you have to send everyone the upcoming box, the active members. You can't not order enough. So you always have to side on caution, which means over-ordering. So it can be very, very problematic. It's probably one of the number one deaths of the subscription boxes or just all their cash is in sitting inventory that they don't have a path for.
Yeah, inventory is always the big challenge. And I notice you're sort of pivoting the conversation from subscription box to memberships. Walk me through that and sort of your implication as a business owner with that term subscription and the perception of subscription on the consumer side.
Yeah, so it's multi-pronged, multifaceted. There's, in oversimplifying it, subscription just has a negative connotation in general, right? People don't like, even if they're signing up for it, they don't like the end result of the money coming out of the bank account or credit card or whatever every month. But also, we saw the writing on the wall that especially, there was a little bit of temporary increase during the pandemic where if you were selling anything online, you saw this uptick. And then when reality came in and the normalization happened and everyone's numbers dropped, if you still look at a chart, but they were still higher than 2019, right? They were still higher than before all that, but everybody got used to these these higher ones.
Yeah.
Around that time, you know, even prior to the growth, we started focusing. We felt the writing was on the wall with subscription boxes long term. So the change in membership, but also providing additional value to our members, to our customers outside of just the box.
Yeah.
Which is not a unique novel concept, but you know, it's one that customers appreciate and the stickiness is there.
Yeah, I think that is a good segue to our next topic where we're going to talk a little bit about content. And so I'll just ask kind of flat out. I mean, you have a big content production business, you know, you're huge on YouTube, your videos generate so much like engagement, comments. You have a lot of interesting people on the show. What percentage of your members are really signing up for the content, not for the box?
So we talk to our members a lot. So we're constantly asking questions. We have some automations and some automation surveys when customers hit certain criteria that are above average LTV, above average lifetime duration. And one of the questions is there's several, but they're pointed and they dig into the content piece to better understand.
Yeah.
So all of our, so 80% of our better than average LTV or lifespan customers, 80% of them regularly watch our YouTube channel, which is
so
a pretty wild number.
Yeah.
And it's definitely tough with content and the amount of resources we put in it, because it's not like you run a Facebook ad and you can see the result and it's black and white and it's profitable or not. It's tough to attribution wise to, like, you know, someone watches a YouTube video, it's not like they have a pixel on their computer now, you know, when they go to our site directly.
Right.
So it's a challenge, but we have enough confidence just by talking to enough of our customers that the content piece is both a retention tool, but it's also top of funnel for us. And it's wild for a small business our size to have 2 full-time creators, 4 full-time video editors. It's a lot. I just described, I think, like 15% of our staff to have that much focus. And then obviously we have graphic artists and a social media coordinator and a content coordinator and a bunch of other marketing roles that touch the content a great deal. It's an interesting approach to put so much value in it, but it's, in my humble opinion, it's not a gamble. We're confident. We know that the consumer behavior, I've talked about this before, how consumer behavior has continued changing and moving in this direction. This has happened for over a decade, where when you buy, you look at the need want scale, and you know, I could argue that you need BattleBox to be prepared, but the reality is it's probably closer on the want side.
Yeah.
So when you're making those additional purchases as a consumer, you want to feel some kind of connection to the brands you're buying from. Mm-hmm. And the easiest way to accomplish that is content.
You're hitting on so many points that I want to ask you about, because I've said for the last few years that brands should become media companies. So that's kind of like one point. The other one is, I'm out there on LinkedIn as well. And, you know, people come to me, it's like, hey, I'm thinking about starting an e-commerce business. And I'm like, don't start an e-commerce business. Well, why do you say that? I want to start an e-commerce. I was like, don't start an e-commerce business. First, attract a following. Then start an e-commerce business. Like, it feels like you're saying the same thing. Could you explain a little bit, like, what are people missing about the value of content?
No, I think you nailed it. So, and this is crazy to say that, but this, I'll bring it together at the end. We went from, you know, well, what is this direct consumer brand doing? Or what is this subscription box doing? The leader, the Birchboxes of the world, trying to get best practices from them.
Right.
And then we made this pivot where we said to the marketing team, instead of, you know, doing research on that, like, watch some Mr. Beast videos, watch some Nelk Boy videos, because they did the reverse, right? They created the audience, they got the engagement, they had them, and then they dropped a product on, and, you know, replicating Mr. Beast, that's probably impossible.
Maybe impossible, right?
Right. But because of what he was able to accomplish with content, he then drops a chocolate brand, and day one of launch, they're in every single Walmart nationwide, because, which brands would kill for the opportunity to do that. But he just had the opportunity because of the content, because he created the community. I completely agree with you. If I were to start from scratch, it would be solely focused on content and not sold on what the product even exactly is.
Yeah.
Build the audience and then create the product that they need and want.
No, it's such a good point. And I think it's one that so many people miss. Everyone's focused on ROAS and their fucking attribution metrics and all these things that it's just like, stop thinking about your damn website.
Yeah. I think you're spot on. It's music to my ears because I think we're quickly realizing you and I are on the same exact page.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, clearly there are a lot of people out there that value e-commerce businesses, you know, during the heyday, say 2019, you know, even before 2010s, especially during the pandemic, multiple of revenue, post-pandemic, multiple of EBITDA. Content, where is content on your EBITDA?
It's tough, right? I mean, like, how do you put a valuation on the small media firm that we have instilled in our team? It's tough. You know, when we sold in 2021, I think it helped with the multiplier, but there wasn't a formula and we couldn't line item the goodwill or the value of our social reach. But you show that reach to people and they get it. It makes our job easier on the procurement side because we're going to show this to millions of people that are in your ICP. They're your ideal customer.
These people, they don't understand why people buy things. And I think most people who start e-commerce businesses, frankly, don't either. It's the trust factor.
100%. You know, the funniest thing is if you just start ingesting some of our content, the uber majority of it, we're not selling anything at all. There's no hard sale. Now, don't get me wrong, mid funnel, we'll throw an ad up. There'll be an intro offer. We're trying to get you on board and we'll do the same, you know, in certain cadences of emails and SMS. But for the most part, most of our content.
Yeah. 80% probably, I'm guessing.
Yeah. At least is not selling at all. We're just living the lifestyle of the product, just being outdoor enthusiasts, prepared people.
So talk to me about that credibility factor, because I think that's what sometimes brands are missing. First of all, they don't spend any time on copy. Their imagery is poor. There's no romance. This is kind of the typical, you know, fashion brand, luxury kind of thing. And then you're in the space where you're selling the lifestyle. So talk to me about, like, how do you establish the credibility there?
Great question. You know, I'll tell you how we started. I think you can replicate this because of what we did and how we did it. So when we launched our go-to market strategy, and there was no rocket science or tough math in there. It was pretty simple. One of the things we did besides launch Meta ads was we sent, I think 25 or 30 boxes to YouTubers. Right now, this is standard practice that everybody has, right? But like, that was a little, that's a big thing to do. And then we tracked them and we watched the videos and we wanted that organic video presence. Mm-hmm. And we had, you know, a spreadsheet where we were tracking it all. And we saw, and also it's 2015, it's people would flip out if you did this now. We had a pre-purchase survey. Mm. So stop, don't buy from us yet. Tell us how you heard about us. We had all your usual suspects, and there was the other button, and you could type something in. And in the first couple months, we started to see it. A bunch of people putting current 1776 in there, and we're like, we don't know who this is. We went to YouTube. We did a Google search, found him on YouTube. He has a YouTube channel. He's doing a review for us each month. Okay, he's one of the 30 people we sent it to. Went there. He's not there.
Huh.
Figured out his real name, looked him up. He's a paying customer.
Huh.
Okay. With great screen personality.
Yeah.
Stage presence.
Pretty rare. Like,
super talented individual. He was just a paying customer, putting out content himself. And we saw that as an opportunity because clearly people like this guy.
Right.
He was giving, you know, unbiased views of the product. He clearly liked it and it was genuine. You could tell And we quickly reached out to him and said, hey, Brandon, nice to meet you. Yeah. Keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
And
we don't want to screw this up.
Yeah. You don't have to pay for your box anymore. Box is free. Just keep doing what you're doing. And then I think 3 months went by and we said, okay, hey, Brandon, box is still free. Keep doing what you're doing. We're going to give you $500 a month just because we love it. We love you. And then a little bit after a year, it was April 2016, we said, hey, Brandon, we know you have a full-time career job. He was greater than 20 years. He was a chiller mechanic, like HVAC stuff, but on like bigger units. Like he went into like a nuclear facility and like making great money, has a great job, has a career during the day. And this is all just fun for him at nighttime. And we said, hey, man, like, what's it going to take for, and he has three kids, like for you to move you, your kids, your wife down to us and just do what you're doing at nighttime full time. And he said, yeah. And we figured out a deal and he came down and then we were able to really just lean in on the content. We've now done it. We have two full-time creators now. Joey, who came on came in at the second half of last year. He was a customer. We did some part-time like content work because he wanted to do it. And we quickly realized the same thing. Like people are connecting with this individual. He knows what he's talking about. He understands the product. He genuinely likes it. When people genuinely like it, you can tell.
Right.
And when you can tell, it's infectious. And you want to be a part of it. And so we brought him on full-time as well. What I described, it's not easy, but everyone branched up to a
It's not certain, impossible either, right?
Right. People to a certain, if you're at any skill at all, like you have people you're regularly sending the box out to or the product or the item, whatever. And people are doing, whether it's TikToks, YouTube shorts, or whatever sort of content, and you can see genuine. And you've seen some larger brands have even done that. They've said, hey, we're going to give some equity to this big creator sponsor to be a part of the team.
So Brian Tran, whoever it is, right?
Yeah. So it's there. Yeah, I think, you know, it's just opening your eyes and looking at what's around you.
A number of times in the discussion, you've mentioned metrics. And you mentioned when we were having conversations before that you guys are sort of self-professed data nerds. I guess, how did you come to that? And talk to me about the importance of data and what do you look at every day?
So, I mean, I'm just a data nerd in general. So this is my third career. My second career was in B2B sales. So software as a service, infrastructure as a service. My first career was poker, you know, to the extreme excitement of my parents after after university and getting my degree, I said, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I did it for 4.5 years, but
I'm going to follow Phil Hellmuth.
Well, it was the time period where, you know, Chris Moneymaker, this is early 2000s. It was the cool thing to do. You know, TLDR wasn't good enough. I was a B plus on a good day. But if you're not A, like you look at people that were still playing poker that are my age now, and it was not something that I wanted to be a part of. But there was a lot of math in that. Most of my success was online because you could play more tables, you could get rid of mathematical variance. So I'm a big data nerd. I would literally do exports of all my hands and run it through to see models. Super, super nerdy with data. Back to your question though, we look at a lot of metrics. There's none in any that you would no aha moment of, oh, you look at that. It's the standard stuff you would think. We obsess over churn and retention rates. We obsess over LTV. We don't obsess over conversion rate as much as some. Don't get me wrong. Right now we're running an A/B test on the site. We're definitely trying to improve and it's a constant, we're constantly working on, you know, conversion rate optimization. It's not in the same category of the obsession, right? I'm not looking at our conversion rate every single day, but I am looking at our active members, how many churned off that day, how many we brought on.
I've found, I mean, frankly, and I think the CRO industry probably doesn't want to hear this, most people's conversion rate doesn't change. It's because of the freaking offer.
So much.
It's the offer.
Yeah. a strong offer, our conversion rate triples. It's not, our site didn't improve.
Correct.
Right.
I still remember that company that Amazon bought back in the day. What is it, 10, 15 years ago, called Woot? Do you remember Woot.com?
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about the box business, they sold literally boxes of crap.
Yeah.
On a single page website and crushed it.
Mm-hmm. And they got bought for like a
they got bought, yeah.
It was like an obnoxious number. The offer is the single. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you have a broken site, but
it's very hard to make a broken site in 2020.
In today's day and age, it's
hard.
You have to purposely almost do it to have a broken site.
That didn't used to be true. Even 10, 15 years ago, you could really screw up a Magento site pretty fast.
Sure.
With Shopify, with BigCommerce, with WooCommerce even. I think any of these guys, you can't screw it up.
No. Well, they've locked down a lot of parts, so you can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't. They don't trust the merchant to be able to access the checkout fully.
A good reason for that, because for most people, it's not going to matter. It's hilarious. I mean, this has been a great conversation, John. I feel like we could keep talking for like...
I could keep going. This is,
you know, hours and hours. This has been a lot of fun. If you are at a larger business, like, I think there's something you can teach a lot of larger businesses about the value of brand trust and brand authority. What do you think the big guys, like the department stores, people who sell into department stores, could learn from you?
I would say truly, truly engaging with their community, in turn, consumers, customers. I think the bigger brands get content wrong most of the times. They're following trends because it's going to get the views. It's a much harder thing to execute. I think there are some that do execute it, that are able to have a unique voice, mm-hmm. and connect with their consumers. But most of the big brands, like, they're just not doing it. Right. They're just trying to hit some trends and get some views, but there's not any, like, it's not a top of funnel true connection. It's, right. Oh, they made me laugh. Yeah.
So really, really trying to engage your community. I find a lot of these brands treat content production as a cost center, and they're just trying to make it as small as possible.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong at all.
But it's been a lot of fun having you on here, John, and look forward to potentially having you back in the future.
Yeah, I'd love to. Rick, thank you so much.